Genesis chapter 29 and 30, we're going to talk about learning and learning. When we think about learning, you know, we learn, one of the first things you think of is school. You know, I mean, when we're at school, we're supposed to learn. That's one of the things we're supposed to do when we go to school, is to learn something when we go to school. And we need to pay attention if we're going to learn something. But we also learn in many different ways. We may learn from practice. I mentioned this morning about riding a bicycle. That's how you learn to ride a bicycle, by practice. That's how you learn to play the piano, by practice. That's how you learn to do your memory verses, by practice. All right, so we learn from practice. We also learn from experience. You know, there's things that each of us have experienced that we've learned about that. One of the thoughts that came to my mind when I was preparing this is I know what it's like to have malaria. And that's no fun. I don't wish that on anybody. But I've experienced it, and I know what it's like, and I know the pain involved, and I know the troubles involved, and I know the fever involved, and the terrible feeling. I know that because I've experienced it. So we learn from experience, and some of you have learned things from other experiences that you've had. We also learn from our friends. Sometimes we learn wise things from our friends. Sometimes we learn foolish things from our friends. And that's what we've been studying on Wednesday night, the importance of making sure that we're learning wise things and not foolish things. But we learn from our friends. We also should learn from our mistakes. You know, the things we've done wrong, we suffer the consequences of it. You make a mistake and you think, ugh, why did I do that? And if we learn from that, then we won't have to repeat it. So we learn in many different ways. And learning is good if it makes us a better person. Sometimes if you learn from a bad friend, a foolish friend, what you learned is not good because it's not going to make you a better person. But God wants us to learn things that will make us a better person. And that is good for us when we do that. Now this evening as we look at Jacob's life, one of the things that I want us to notice here that we're to focus on this evening is how that Jacob was taught by God. God was teaching Jacob some lessons, and he taught him lessons in several different ways, and I want us to see some of these lessons that Jacob learned. These are lessons we need to learn as well. They will help us in our daily walk with God. The first lesson we see, starting verse number 1, it says, "And then Jacob went on his journey and came into the land of the people of the east, and he looked, and behold, a well in the field, and lo, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it, for out of that well they watered the flocks, and a great stone was upon the well's mouth, and thither all the flocks were gathered, and they rolled the stone from the well's mouth, and watered the sheep, and put the stone again upon the well's mouth in its place." All right, now, let's stop there and just think about that. You know, you need to use your imagination and think a little bit. All right, so here's this hole in the ground. This well must not have been very big at the top. They may have capped it off so that it was just a small hole. You know, it may have been much bigger down below and maybe put the bricks on closer and closer and closer toward the top so it was kind of a smaller hole and it probably covered up around the edges with dirt. But they would go and they had a stone laying on the top of that. Why would they do that? So little boys like you guys wouldn't fall down in it. I mean, those things were deep. Some of them were very deep. You fall down in it, that's the end of you. All right? So they put a stone over the top of it to keep the animals out, keep the little boys out, and keep the girls out. But they'd have to roll the stone away from the mouth of that thing in order to put their buckets down in it. And they'd let their buckets weigh down into the water with their rope and pull it back up and bring up their water. It was a lot of work to get your water in those days. They didn't just turn on a tap. Right? And so Jacob's there by this well. And it says in verse number 4, "And Jacob said unto them, My brethren, whence be ye? And they said, Of Haran we are. And he said unto them, Know ye Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, We know him." All right, now, let's stop there for a moment. The first thing that we learn from Jacob, that God's teaching Jacob, is that God is faithful. What did God tell Jacob back in that dream that he had when he saw the ladder coming down from heaven? What did God tell him there? What did God teach him there? God said, I am going to be with you. I will take you where you need to go. I will guide you. I will direct you. I will be your God. And now Jacob has traveled that 780 to 800 kilometer journey, and he's made it all the way to the north up there to Haran, and he gets to this well out in the middle of the field, And he says, I wonder if this is getting close. I've traveled a long way. I must be getting close. And he asks them who they were. And they said, oh, we're from Haran. And he goes, oh, awesome. And he says, do you know Laban? And they said, yeah, we know him. And Jacob in his heart's going, yes, God brought me here, met my needs. God took care of me. And we see here that God took care of Jacob and he kept him safe during that long journey. That was a long, long way to travel by himself. And not only did he keep him safe, but he kept him healthy. You know, there's lots of things that could have gone wrong during that time. There was wild beasts. There was all kinds of problems. He could have had snake bites. There's all kinds of things that could have gone wrong during that time. But Jacob was kept safe during that entire trip. And God showed himself faithful. And not only that, but God led Jacob. You know, you stop and think about it. If you were to walk from here to Darwin by yourself with no map, do you suppose you'd ever make it? I don't know. I probably wouldn't. You know, you go wandering around and you think, oh, I hope I'm going the right direction. You'd have to be able to look at the stars and be able to say, oh yeah, I'm still going in the northern direction. And you got to know which direction you're going. I mean, Haran was way up there, 800 kilometers to the north. How in the world? I mean, there was a road probably, a ruggedy road. It wasn't, you know, any, you know, a bitumen road that he was following on his bicycle. You know, it was a long travel. It was a long way off, but God led him. God directed him. God kept him in the right way and led him the right way all the way to Haran. And that was a blessing for him. Not only that, we see as we continue reading on, verse number 6, and he said unto them, Is he well? Is Laban well? And they said, he is well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, cometh with the sheep. And he said, lo, it is yet high day. It's the middle of the daytime. Neither is it time that the cattle should be gathered together. Water ye the sheep and go and feed them. And they said, we cannot until all the flocks be gathered together, until they roll the stone from the well's mouth. Then we will water the sheep. All right, so probably the shepherds were probably all girls like Rachel. And so they can't move this big heavy rock. And once they get all their flocks together, somebody probably goes back to the village and says, all right, you know, a big strong man, come out and roll a stone away because all the flocks are ready. And some big guy would come out there and roll the stone away and all the girls would go all that work. Can you imagine letting that bucket down in the water and bringing it back up and watering 500 sheep? That'd be a lot of buckets. You know, a lot of these farmers had a lot of sheep. And so they down with the bucket, bring it back up, water our sheep, and oh, it's gone already. Water down again, and they just drink it down. And I mean, that was a lot of work. And so this was what was taking place here. And Isaac or Jacob here, he comes to this place, and he sees Rachel coming. And verse number 9, and while he yet spake with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, and for she kept them. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, and Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. All right, so Jacob said, I'm not going to wait for that big guy from the town to come out to roll that stone away. I'll roll it away myself. And he rolled it away. Not only did he roll it away, but he fetched all the water for Laban's sheep. I mean, all the other shepherds are probably standing around wondering, you know, what did you do for me? Me too. But he pulls up all the water and Rachel's standing there watching during this whole time. But why did he do that? Because he was excited and he was thankful that God had been faithful to him. God had been faithful. You know, we too must learn that when God keeps us safe and provides and guides us through the dark paths of life, that God is faithful. We know that, but we need to keep reinforcing that. We need to keep emphasizing that. When God answers a prayer, God is faithful. When God meets a need, God is faithful. When God takes care of us, God is faithful. When God helps us get better from a sickness, God is faithful. And it isn't just, oh, I got better, or it isn't just fate. It isn't just an accident. It wasn't, I got lucky. That word lucky doesn't exist in the Christian vocabulary. It is God that did it. God provided for them. And so we need to remember that and it'll help us. The psalmist gave thanks to God for his goodness. Over in Psalm 107 verse 8 it says, oh, that men would praise the Lord for his goodness, for his wonderful works to the children of men. We need to praise God for the many times God meets our needs and provides for us and supplies for us, and remember that God is faithful. So Jacob learned, first of all, that God was faithful. But secondly, Jacob learned another lesson that was not as fun to learn, and that was he learned that we will reap what we sow. We'll reap what we sow. Verse number 15. It says, "And Laban said unto Jacob, because thou art my brother, shouldest thou therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what should be thy wages?" All right, so what's he say? He says, you know, you're my brother. He wasn't brother, but he was a relative. So he's actually his cousin, or his nephew. All right, so Laban was Jacob's mom's brother. Okay, so Uncle Laban then, he says, you know, Jacob, listen, you know, I appreciate you being around here. You've been here for a month, and I've taken care of you, and you've been help out here. But listen, why don't you just work for me? And you tell me what you want for wages, and we'll work something out. All right? And so he speaks to him about that, and we see in verse number 16, and Laban had two daughters. The elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. All right, so Leah wasn't very attractive. She was just kind of average, not really attractive. But Rachel was a beautiful woman, and they're sisters. And Jacob says, Jacob loved Rachel, verse 18. And he said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy daughter, thy younger daughter. And Laban said, it's better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. So Jacob said, I really love that woman. Now, whether he really loved her with a agape love or whether he loved her with a romantic love, I don't know. Probably more of a romantic love at this point. You know, he wasn't really meeting her needs. She was just attractive to him, and he's thinking, wow, I came up here, Dad sent me up here to find a wife, and she's the one, man. She's a beautiful woman, and I want her. All right, so he works for her for 7 years. So this is this deal he makes out with his father, or with Laban. All right, now, Jacob in his youth had sowed deceit. Now, when we talk about sowing, all right, boys, I want you to listen to this one. When we're talking about sowing now, we're not talking about needle and thread sowing. We're talking about planting crops in the field. When they would sow in the fields in those days, they had a bag full of the grain, and they had it over their shoulder, and they'd reach their hand in, and they'd spread it out like that. And they'd reach their hand in and spread it out like that. That was sowing the grain. And they sow it in the field, and then they'd take and run a rake type of a tool over it, and it would get covered up with the dirt, and then the waters would come, and the grain would sprout. So they were sowing. And God tells us that what we sow, we're going to reap. All right? Now, what that means is if you sow wheat in your field, you're not going to get corn. All right? If you sow, you know, tomatoes in your garden, you're not going to get beans. You're going to get what you sowed. And so here, when he was younger, what did Jacob sow in his life? Jacob sowed deceit. He was a deceitful man. He deceived his brother. When we think about deceit, we're talking about lying. He tricked his brother. He cheated his brother. And he did this. Remember, he sold got the birthright for a bowl of soup. He deceived his brother, tricked him into doing that. And then he also deceived his father into giving him the firstborn blessing. Remember, he put those goat skins over his arms and around his neck, and he came in and with the goats and said, oh, here's the venison I got you, Dad. And he deceived his dad. And he tricked him. And that was a wrong thing for him to do. But that's what he did in his youth. Now he's going to reap what he sowed. And this is very tragic for him. The law of sowing and reaping is that you always sow what you sow, or you always reap what you sow, you always reap after you sow, and you always reap more than you sow. Three things. The law of reaping, sowing and reaping. You need to remember that, all right? You sow, you will reap what you sow, you will reap later than you sow, and you will reap more than you sow. All right, so if I plant one, I've got some little seedlings growing. All right, so I planted my trombocchino, and I put that trombocchino in the ground, and it's coming up, and one seed come up with this nice, beautiful little plant. And that beautiful little plant when it grows in the garden, providing nothing bad happens to it, it's going to give me lots of churumbakinos to eat. All right? And so I'm going to receive what I planted. I planted a churumbakino seed. I'm going to get churumbakino. And when it comes up, I'm going to get it after I planted it. It's going to have to wait quite a while, several weeks and months and a half or so before I'll get any fruit from it. So I'm going to have to wait. It'll come after, and I'm going to get more than I planted. Now, that's really nice in the garden, but it's not so nice when we've done something wrong. Jacob did something wrong. He deceived. He planted deceit and lies. And now it's coming back, and he's going to have to harvest some of that. And what happens here? His father-in-law tricks him, or it's going to be his father-in-law. Laban tricks him. We see down there in verse number 21, and Jacob said unto Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, and I have that I may go in unto her. And Laban gave him gathered together all the men of the place, and they made a feast. All right, so here's the situation. Jacob had worked for 7 years for Rachel. He's just dying to marry her. He's madly in love. He's all excited. He's going to marry his Rachel, that beautiful woman he's been working for 7 years. And so he says, come on, Laban. It's time for the wedding. I've worked my 7 years. Laban said, yep, sure enough, it is. All right, so he calls everybody together. And then look at verse 23. And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to him, and he went into under her. And Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpha, his handmaid, for his maid for an handmaid. And it came to pass in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said unto Laban, what is this that thou hast done to me? Did not I serve thee for Rachel? Wherefore hast thou beguiled me? And Laban said unto him, oh, it must not be done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will give thee also this also for the service which thou shalt do for to serve with me yet 7 other years. All right, so here's the dirty deal he did. He says, all right, somehow, and I don't know how, I can't imagine this, that somehow he tricked Jacob into thinking that he was marrying Rachel, but he really married Leah. All right, now, a couple of possibilities. Obviously, Leah was in favor of the idea, because she had to go along with it. She could have said, no way, Daddy, I'm not going to marry him. But she went along with it. So she played the part. Then also, the girls must have been about the same build, about the same voice, and they always wore a veil over their faces and things like that in those days. And it was nighttime. So all those things taken into consideration, somehow Jacob didn't realize that this woman behind all this veil and stuff was Leah instead of Rachel. And he marries her instead of Rachel. In the morning, he says, what's going on? I got cheated here. You know, how did I get deceived? You're not Rachel. And he was not very happy. And so then Laban said, oh, you know, sorry. But, you know, we can't do it that way in our country because the older girl has to get married before the younger girl. That wouldn't be very nice. And so you can work another 7 years and you can get Rachel. But he says, I won't make you wait the 7 years. You can have her now, but you still got to work the 7 years. And so Jacob here gets tricked. And that was a big, bad, dirty trick. And it was because he was reaping what he sowed. He sowed lies and deceits, and now he's reaping the lies and deceits. You know, past deception caused many bitter feelings in Jacob's family. You think about that. When he tricked his older brother, Esau was very upset when he found out that he got tricked out of his birthright by a bowl of soup. And he was not happy about that. And then when he stole the blessing from Esau, he was very upset about that. And Isaac, his dad, was very upset about that. If the family was very unhappy about all of these deceitful things that Jacob had done, and now it's turned around, and now it's coming back after him. You know, there's an important verse for us to remember that goes right hand in hand with this. Galatians 6, 7 and 8. It says there, be not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, and he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. God says, whatever you sow, you're going to reap. Now, each of us need to remember that. You young people need to remember that as well. That's important. What you plant in your garden of your life, you are going to reap. that is important for us to remember. If you sow worldliness, you know, if you act like the world, look like the world, talk like the world, and you sow that in your life, you will reap ungodliness. It'll happen. You cannot escape it. You know, you cannot say, well, I planted wheat and I'm just determined I'm gonna get corn out of that. Well, you can think that all you want, but you're not gonna get corn, you're gonna get wheat. And the same is true in our life. You plant worldliness in your life and you will not get godliness. You will get ungodliness from that. It can't happen any other way. And because that's part of the law of sowing and reaping. Also, if you deceive your parents, you will reap sorrow for that. You will pay for that. It will get back to you. Even in our marriages, if you deceive your spouse, you will reap problems. You cannot deceive your spouse and think that nothing bad is going to happen of it. It will. It will catch up with us. We need to be truthful and honest. If we deceive the boss, it's going to catch up with us. We're going to get in trouble for that. Eventually, we'll get caught, and eventually it'll come back to us, to haunt us. And what we sow, we will reap, and it will not be fun. And so God is warning us here, and He's teaching us here, that the law of the sowing and reaping, we need to learn this. It'll help us in our lives. But then there's a third lesson He learned. And that is that multiple marriages bring grief. Verse number 31. And it came, now remember now He's got two wives. He's got Leah and He's got Rachel. In verse number 31 it says, and the Lord saw that Leah was hated and He opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. All right, now God saw all this. Now, as we think about that, was it God's plan for a man to marry two or three or four wives? No, it wasn't. You read back in Genesis chapter 1, and when God created Adam and Eve, He didn't create Adam and Eve and Sally and Jane and Susie and, you know, three or four others and say, all right, here, they're all yours. He didn't do that. But you know one thing, and I can't explain this, and I won't even try, but for some reason, God often overlooked polygamy in the Bible. Polygamy means marrying more than one wife. And God overlooked it in David's life. He overlooked it in Saul's life. Now, does that mean that God approved of it? I don't think so, but somehow God just kind of turned a blind eye to it. I don't know why. I'm going to have to talk to the Lord about that when we get to heaven someday and ask Him some questions. I don't know. But one thing we know for sure, that's not what God planned in the beginning. And every time you look in the Bible, every example of polygamy in the Bible where they had more than one wife brought trouble. It was always trouble. And in Jacob's family here, he's got two wives. And to try to solve some of the problems and calm things down, he loves Rachel. This isn't what I started out here. He loved Rachel, and he really didn't like Leah at all. I mean, she was just a nuisance because he didn't want her. He wanted Rachel. So he didn't love Leah, but he loved Rachel. And God allowed then Rachel not to have any kids. And that was kind of a, oh, man, I want kids. And Leah, she starts having a bunch of kids. And Leah's feeling like, oh, maybe he'll love me now because I'm having all these boys and he's going to have all these sons and he'll love me now. Jacob never really seemed to love her anyway. And then Rachel said, all right, I got a plan. You know, since I can't have any kids, take my handmaid and you marry her and she can have some kids and I'll call them mine. So he does that. And then Leah says, well, that's not fair. Here, you can have my handmaid too and have some more kids for me. And so he marries another. So now he's got four wives. Four times the trouble he had in the beginning. And do you think they all get along? No, they're not getting along. They're squabbling and fighting and having a hard time and difficulty. You read through these chapters here and you see all kinds of problems and struggles that they had. It was not God's plan and it didn't work. And, you know, the same is true when we come today. You know, polygamy today is technically illegal in most countries. You can't legally marry two wives. But you know, there's something that's very similar to it that reaps a lot of the same problems. And that is when there's divorce and remarriage. There's a lot of the same problems. The children are confused. You look at homes where they've had multiple marriages there. And the children, you know, these two got to go off to see their dad this weekend. And these three got to go off and see their mom next weekend. All these problems and discord and disharmony and conflicts, and there's strife and problems there. And that's why God tells us over in Matthew chapter 19 and verse number 6, he says, "Wherefore, they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder." God says, when I join two people together in marriage, don't put it apart. Don't pull it apart, no matter what. And you know, each of you young people and all the rest of us too need to keep this in our minds that marriage is for life. Marriage isn't until I get tired of the old witch. It's marriage is for life. Right? And there's nothing that's to break it. And we're to keep it close and bonded. And nothing is to break that bond, no matter what. And that is what God's plan is, and that's what we need to focus on. And the Bible talks often about this. And as long as the former spouse is still alive, remarriage is wrong. You read that in Romans chapter 7, verses 2 and 3, and also in 1 Corinthians 7, 10 and 11. That remarriage is not an option. And so whenever that takes place, and there are a lot of good people that have gone through that, and I'm not trying to pick on people that have gone through that, but you look at their lives and there's always conflict. There's always issues. There's always problems. And it's never a happy situation. Jacob, here he loves Rachel. He hates Leah. Leah starts having kids and Rachel doesn't. There's discord and they're fighting. The girls are fighting back and forth. You know, the two sisters, they were fighting when they were kids and now they're fighting when they're adults. And they're married to the same husband. What a mess. And got all kinds of conflicts. The sisters are selfish and there's jealousy there. 30 verse 1 says, "And Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children. And Rachel envied her sister and said unto Jacob, Jacob, give me children or else I die." And how does Jacob respond? And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel. And he said, "Am I in God's stead who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb?" So Rachel's coming to him and said, "Sweetie pie, you got to give me children or I'm going to die." And Jacob says, "What am I supposed to do? I'm not God. I can't give you kids. It's not my fault." Tension, problem, discord, unhappy feelings. So there's a lot of conflict and problems there. There's anger and harsh words. And to try to resolve the tension, he goes and marries his two handmaids, and that just adds to the problem. The family feud gets bigger. And the problems get deeper. And we will see in the future chapters that the children struggled in the midst of this family struggling and fighting with favoritism. Remember, that's one of the biggest problems. Why did Joseph get sold in Egypt? Because of favoritism. Because he was daddy's favorite because he was the son of Rachel. And the sons of Leah and the other two handmaids, they didn't like Joseph because Joseph gets everything. He's daddy's favorite. And so there's tension, there's problems, there's conflicts. They end up selling him. They think he's going to be killed down there. They think he dies. You know the whole story. It's an exciting story, but it's a sad story. It's a sad story of trouble and conflict in their home. And, you know, from this lesson, we need to learn that second marriages face a similar problem as Jacob faced. Maybe not everything in an exact way, but there's a lot of similar problems. And, you know, there's comparison of my former spouse was different than this, and they used to treat me like this, and look how you treat me, and there's conflicts and problems. That's why so many times I believe that, you know, these second marriages have about half as much chance to survive as the first marriages do. They just don't last because there's so many problems. And the children are confused. There's torn between loyalties. You know, do I stay loyal to mom or do I stay loyal to dad? And, you know, who do I side with? And the poor kids are torn there. And all kinds of problems in that. Now we find this a fourth lesson that we need to learn in verse 25. Verse number 25, and it says of chapter 30 in verse number 25. And at verse 25 it says, "And it came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph." All right, so she had Joseph, her firstborn son, and later on she has Benjamin just before she dies. But that's a few years later. But she just has Joseph, and Jacob said unto Laban, "Send me away that I may go into my own place and to my own country." All right, so he says, "Laban, listen, I've been here for 14 years now. I want to go back home. It's time for me to go back home." And how does Laban respond? Laban begs him not to leave. He says, Jacob said, "Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served thee, and let me go, for thou knowest my service which I have done to thee." done thee. And Laban said unto him, Oh, I pray thee, if I have found favor in thine eyes, tarry, for I have learned by experience that the Lord hath blessed me for thy sake. And he said, Appoint me thy wages, and I will give it. And he said, And thou knowest how that I have served thee, and how thy cattle was with me, and for it was little which thou hast before I came, and it is now increased into a multitude, and the Lord has blessed thee since my coming. And now when shall I provide for mine own house also? And he said, What wilt thou give me? And Jacob said, Thou shalt not give me anything. If thou wilt do this thing for me, then I will feed and keep thy flock. I will pass through the flock today, removing from thence all the speckled and spotted cattle, and all the brown and cattle among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and such shall be mine hire. All right, so here's what Jacob says. All the sheep that were funny looking, I'll take. You keep the nice looking ones. They're the ones that are the prized ones. You keep the nice looking ones, I'll take the funny looking ones, those are the spots and the speckles and you know, all the weird markings on them. I'll take those for my wages. And then Laban says, okay, that sounds fair. But as you look through the chapters ahead, we find that when Jacob finally leaves, after another 6 years, he says, Laban, you have cheated me again and again and again. You changed my wages 10 times. You kept changing them all the time because you didn't like the fact that I was getting something you wanted. And you kept changing my wages. What is happening here? The sowing and reaping is still taking place. Alright? Jacob's still having trouble. But Jacob works for him, and despite those hardships, God blesses him. Now something weird takes place here. Jacob took some sticks. He went out and cut some green sticks out of the woods, and he cut stripes in them, made white stripes in these things. And when the big, strong cattle that had speckles and spots on them were breeding with the sheep, he would put those in front of their feeding troughs. And for some reason, when they would do that, then all the sheep would get pregnant with these big, strong sheep that were breeding them. And when the skinny, scrawny ones were breeding, he'd take the sticks away. And so as a result, the big strong ones had spots and speckles, and the ones that didn't have spots and speckles were the skinny scrawny ones. And so Laban gets all the skinny scrawny ones, he gets the big strong ones with all spots. And you know, I looked at that passage a lot of times, and I thought, what in the world is that talking about? Right? Was this mysterious? Was Jacob just being weird? Did he really think that? And you know, as I've pondered through that, I've got some ideas here that I think can help us. Alright? One of the things that'll help us is that sometime later in chapter 31, verses 11 and 12, Jacob tells his wives that God told him that he was in control of the breeding of those animals. Alright, so that's an important key. And then often God would use human participation to do his miracles. Alright, for example, when God brought water out of the rock for Jacob, for Moses, what did God tell Moses to do? Hit the rock. Well, the second time he told him to speak to it. The first time he told him to hit it. The second time he told him to speak to it. So Moses had to get involved. Also, when the widow poured the oil into all those pitchers for Elisha, and she filled up all those bottles, she had to get involved in that for God to do the miracle. Then also, when the servant of Elisha was chopping down wood and the axe head went into the water, Elisha took a stick and threw it in the water and the axe head floated. So in each of these examples, God was using men to do things to perform his miracles. Now, it could be, and I don't know, God doesn't explain it very clearly, but it could be that God told Jacob, listen, Jacob, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You take and cut down those trees and put those little stripes in them, and when the fat ones are out there, you put in front of them when they're eating, and I'll make sure that you get fat. You know, all the healthy ones are going to be yours. And then when the scrawny ones are there, you take them away. I don't know. Maybe that's what happened. It certainly sounds like Jacob was not trying to do something bad, because you listen to his words later on as he's talking to Laban, and he's very modest, and he tells Laban, and he actually appeals to his righteousness and says, I have been righteous. I've done what is right. And look at what's happened. God has blessed me, and he's not blessing you because you're not treating me right. So Jacob wouldn't have any leg to stand on if he was been deceiving him and cheating him all this time. So it looks to me like God was using this unusual way to show Jacob, I'm going to take care of you, I'm going to meet your need. But whatever the case may be, either way, he got lots of sheep. All the big fat ones were his, all the skinny, scrawny ones ended up being Laban's. And then this is how God was taking care of him. Now, what can we learn from this? We can learn from this that God is in control. We need to learn every circumstance is God is in control. Men can try to do things. Laban changed his wages 10 times. Yet God was still in control, and God still blessed Jacob. Even though Laban was trying to cheat him. Laban was trying to get all the fat stuff, and he was trying to take it away, but God was blessing and taking care of him. So, important for us to see there that God is in control, and that is true in our lives as well. No matter what people may do to us, no matter what circumstances may come to us, God is still in control. We need to trust God. So, 4 lessons he taught him here. First of all, God taught Jacob that he was always faithful. Secondly, he taught him to that we're going to reap what we sow. You're going to reap what you sow. And we need to learn from that, that we don't sow the wrong kind of things. Then we saw also that Jacob learned the hard way that multiple marriages bring grief. He married all these wives. All they brought him was grief and hardship and squabbling and arguing and fighting all the time. And then Jacob also learned that God was in control of his wages, even when Laban worked against him. God is in control. Those are some things we can pick up on and we can learn some and trust our God. Our God is a great God.